You are now entering the spoiler zone. The following podcast contains explicit plot details and pockets of profanity. You have been warned. The Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in wine and space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss.
Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
And today is a little bit of a downer. We are recording in memoriam of the entertainer Paul O'Grady, who's passed away this year.
What we're going to do as an in memoriam episode is blankety blank.
Dr. Exton, memories?
Massive. And I'm really quite upset about this one because Paul O'Grady and his drag alter ego Lily Savage were unbelievably funny entertainers, going back years and years and years and years. And I remember Lily Savage from the drag scene way back in the 90s and just being absolutely hilarious and filthy, and then got better known as a stand-up and got a more mainstream audience, was still hilarious but a bit less filthy, and then transitioned almost seamlessly into mainstream entertainment on the BBC of all places.
The BBC,
Would have been the last really big drag entertainer from this country, wouldn't she? I know there's people they bang on about after RuPaul's Drag Race, Bag of Chips and The Vivian and all of these. Lily Savage, everybody knew who Lily Savage was, in the same way as everybody knew who Danny LaRue was. Everybody knew who Sissy and Ada were.
I don't think the public are as widely aware of anyone. Yeah, it's the death of the last great drag icon, really.
Last great British drag icon, because there's still RuPaul, Bianca Del Rio, some of the American entertainers are big names.
Oh, fair enough. Even I've heard of those, even though I wouldn't be able to pick them out of a lineup. But beyond that, I mean, I know him as, I've seen him as an interviewer more than in his Lily Savage persona. And his radio programme used to be amazing. It's very short-sighted at BBC to basically nudge him out, because his show was brilliant. It was one of those warm, matey shows in the same sort of style as Terry Wogan. You felt like somebody was having a chat with you.
We'll come on to the comparison between Lily Savage and Terry Wogan, and they both hosted it.
That was a beautiful, beautiful link in there. Well done, Dr. Exton.
You did set me up rather well. It's almost as though we've done this before.
Cough. Before we do it, shall we have a drink?
Fuck I. Actually, I ended up drinking with Paul O'Grady one evening. One night in Liverpool. I mean, he was like Cynthia Payne in that you could not shut him up. But everything that he said was hilarious. I mean, he was clearly there singing for his supper and was expecting vodka, I think he drank, but was expecting to be sort of conveyor belted drinks while he just held court and entertained. And it wasn't just him and me. I was in a whole group, and he happened to be there in the pub that we were in holding court. And my side hurt so much after that. From laughing, I hasten to add.
There goes the tone, just lowered down a few octaves. Well done. But we shall return to the subject of his humour later in the show. Before then, we do need a proper drinky. It's time to get out the tonic screwdriver, wave it in the direction of the gin, and see what delights we've got this time.
Was it Noel Coward who used to say his perfect recipe for making martini was to pour out the gin, wave it vaguely in the direction of Italy, and that was it?
It was. They don't build them like that anymore. So are we drinking?
Part one of two.
Well, it is, yes. And what have you picked for our first drinky?
Well, we have two matched gins. And they seem appropriate for a son of Liverpool, in that the first one that we're going to do is Everton gin. And then to maintain the balance, we're doing Anfield gin a little bit later. So the Mersey Distillery Everton gin, small batch gin, 40% volume, in a very, very hefty glass bottle. And they made a fair bit of this, because this is from batch 5,134.
Percentage?
40%. Made using only the finest crafted selected botanicals, Everton gin is beautifully smooth with refreshing citrus overtones and a distinctive elderflower background, which provide a fresh and zesty finish. Light on the nose, there is a sweet grapefruit. there is a sweet grapefruit scent followed by a subtle licorice aroma. Well, I'd not thank you for the licorice, frankly, but all the rest of it sounds quite nice.
Mm.
And, oh, God, the licorice does hit you when you smell it.
It does, actually. Oh, well, eyes down, dive in. That's peculiar.
It tastes like antiseptic. This is a bit like drinking TCP.
You see, I've still got the tiniest bit neat in the bottle. Just wave that under your nose. It smells like TCP.
Oh, it does. That's a good noise. I'm rather pleased with that.
If you can control pushing your cork in and out.
I rarely can.
Just put the tip in. I am
bollocks that. I refer you to a conversation we had earlier today. If you're going to do it, do the full log and go full hog and go balls deep.
Scraping us by my fingertails back
that
to
sounds
the
filthy. And I can assure you it was every bit as filthy in context.
I'm desperately trying to claw back to the gin. I would not thank you for another glass of this. In fact, I'm not thanking you for the first glass.
I'm not keen. It's TCP. Oof. Other than that antiseptic flavour, there really isn't anything to it. The rest of it's quite bland, and what there is unpleasant. This is a two from me.
Yeah, it's a two from me as well. It's not outright nasty, but it's not very nice.
It's no Polugar.
No, the gin that took 10 attempts to be that bad, and they still thought that it's a good idea to sell it. No, Everton gin, not a fan, I'm afraid. It's, yeah. I'm sure there's some comparison we can make between TCP and Everton supporters, but since I know fuck all about
sports... Yeah, back the fuck away from that. I quite like my windows left intact.
Yes, my microphone up on bricks.
Oh, God, this is nasty.
It is a bit. Well, somewhat disappointing glass in hand, it's time to descend into the undergallery here at Podcasting House and open up the Black Archive.
I've left mine upstairs. Spaff can have it.
Upstairs?
Spaff will drink anything. You know that.
Yeah, but upstairs.
You let that lighter fluid.
Have you let him out?
I don't know how he manages to get upstairs all the time, but he does. The biscuit tin ends up suspiciously empty.
Here we are in the repository of all lost film and television. And this is where we get to release something back into the wild. Well, my choice
is... Look, over there, that's Spaff with my glass of gin.
Spaff! Come back here, you green bastard. He's not for listening.
Well, no, and he's just blasted himself a hole in the wall to run away through.
Ah, that's Marco Polo 4 we won't be watching again. Look at the burn marks. Anyway, my choice this time is not actually missing, it's just untransmitted. And it seems...
Rather missing the point, but go on.
Well, yes, but I think given the theme of the show, it's quite fitting. It's the last 8 episodes of Series 17 of Blankety Blank from 2002. These were episodes presented by Lily Savage, and they were never aired. And there's some decent names in there. There's people like Brian Blessed, John Savident, June Whitfield, Dale Wintern, Julie Peasgood.
Who?
Oh, Julie Peasgood, possibly not on your radar. She was a familiar face in the 80s and 90s on TV. Very long, very straight hair. I think she became some sort of sex advisor or something in the end. But John Craven, Amanda Barry. It sounds like it could have been quite entertaining, this. But anyway, those episodes were unaired for whatever reason in 2002, and the show didn't come back for another 14 years after that. What are you rescuing?
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, and obviously it was a very carefully kept secret, but Paul O'Grady was from Liverpool.
No!
Did you not realise that?
No.
Okay, well, he hid it so well. And when you think of Liverpool and television, what do you think of?
Bread.
Almost. The Liverbirds.
Oh, same stable.
But a slightly older horse. The first series, The Liverbirds, doesn't exist. All six episodes are missing. When I was growing up, The Liverbirds were an absolute staple. If my gran was in the house, she liked it. My mum didn't, possibly because my mum didn't like being reminded that she lived in Liverpool. She wasn't wild keen on the place. So if I was being looked after by my gran, used to watch The Liverbirds, and I loved it. And the incarnation I remember was towards the end of the run, so with Neris Hughes and Elizabeth Estenson. Most of the run, it was Neris Hughes and Polly James. But for the first season, it was Pauline Collins and Polly James, and none of those episodes exist.
Right, I knew that it was a different cast in the first series. I'd forgotten who it was. Right, excellent choice.
And I'm going to have the theme tune to The Liverbirds in my head for about the next week.
Nothing like a good earworm.
Done by The Scaffold, they did Lily the Pink.
Lily the Pink.
Which has just replaced the Liverbirds theme tune as the earworm in my head and will take even longer to get rid of. It's Paul McCartney's brother-in-law, I think.
Oh, he's off. Here we are, back in the viewing room, and without further ado, it's time to watch the first of our Blankety Blank episodes. We are going all the way back to the beginning in 1979, episode 12 of series 1 with Terry Wogan. Ron VT.
The lady pickpocket nearly fainted. What would she produce?
His magic wand.
His magic wand. His magic wand.
Very good.
Because some say he's a magician. Not anybody who's seen him work. Well, Peter Bull.
I thought a set of conjuring tricks.
Not bad.
And I'm afraid I put his rabbit.
His rabbit. You see, you would, Billy.
Dash it.
Rabbit! Dillis Watling.
Well, I didn't know he was a magician, you see.
What did you think he was? What smart-damned woman.
Well, I've been sitting here listening
to...
I've been sitting here listening to his jokes, you see. So I thought he would produce his bumper fun book.
I happen to be the more serious magician I know. Normally, the funniest thing I pull out of a hat is my head. But usually... I pull a rabbit.
Oh, that's bad. They all seem to think it's the rabbit, Monica, rather than the old magic wand. Alexandra.
White rabbit.
Yeah. Monica, I'm afraid this means that you have no points in the first round. Be of good cheer. There's another round to go. Alfred, give you B, if we may.
Now, Dr. Exton, I can't think why you've picked this one. Because the guest list for this, Alexandra Bastido. Peter Bull, don't know who you are. Paul fucking Daniels, Molly Sugden, Bill Tidy, I think he was some sort of artist, and Dillis Watling, I don't know who she is. Those were a run-up.
Bill Tidy was a cartoonist for the Mail, I think, the Mail or the Mirror or somebody like that. Hence the reason that he drew all his answers. I've no idea who the pompous twat in the first seat was.
Peter Bull, come on, let's consult the Oracle. It was a British character actor who appeared in supporting roles in such films as The African Queen, Tom Jones, and Dr. Strangelove, Peter Cecil Bull. Yep, never heard of you, I'm afraid, guys. And Dillis Watling, the Oracle says, she was an English actress best known for appearing on British television. The end.
In a single episode of Blankety Blank.
First things first, Paul fucking Daniels.
Was pretty funny.
Oh, you must be joking.
No, he was playing up the irritating twat stereotype and doing it with both feet. I didn't particularly like his shows. I thought he was irritating twat undiluted by other people. But on this, I thought he and Wogan sparked off each other pretty well. There was just the right amount of him to be entertaining without being overpowering.
I'm not convinced. I found him intensely irritating all the way through. I mean, he was sat in the Kenny Everett driving seat, so he got that position in this episode. That was clearly the performance that was expected in that seat. However, no, just no. And, oh, creepy as fuck with the women. No!
Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
That was painful.
Molly Sugden, I was really disappointed by. She was very backgroundy, and I don't expect that of her because she's normally front and center and the star of the show and look at me, look at me, look at me. And she wasn't, because I've never seen very many interviews with her or anything. Perhaps she was one of those actresses that put everything into her performance. And she herself was a little bit quiet.
Yeah, I must admit, I think there was one pussy joke that was set up for her by Wogan. But beyond that, yeah, she was quite muted for this one.
And I was disappointed by Alexandra Bastido, because you read her biography and she's this multilingualist who works as a translator for the United Nations for 10 Downing Street, and you tend to think she's got a bit of nous to her, and she really didn't. She came up with some very, very dumb answers.
But again, you usually got one that was there to pretty the place up.
And she was very, very pretty and much less lacquered than Sharon McCreadie, because they were saying that she was in The Aphrodite Inheritance around the same time. So she was obviously there to be the face of that. Have you seen The Aphrodite Inheritance?
I think me and you have seen a bit of it.
Oh, you need to see all of it. It's marvellous. But I expected her answers to have a bit more nous to them, and they just came across as not completely connected to reality. She came up with some very, very odd things.
Mm.
Bill Tidy was quite fun.
Yeah, and so was Pompous Twat. He was entertaining in his own way. I think
he was there to be pompous.
It was more curiosity at what we were watching. But I suppose we better come on to the man himself, Terry Wiggon.
I've forgotten how dismissive he was of the contestants. And we'll come on to this as a comparison with the others later. But it really was personal piss-taking, wasn't it? He was really quite rude to them.
He was, and I genuinely got, with Paul Daniels, a sense of he's trying to diffuse quite an uncomfortable, a series of non-comedy moment. Somebody who's twatting about, he's having a whale of a time, but everybody else is sort of tolerating the jokes. Not really landing, and Wogan's there. Don't know whether we've just picked a bad example in this case, because this as an episode didn't really land for me.
Yeah, but we did two Wogan ones, didn't we? Because we did this one because we saw Alexandra Bastido and thought, oh, we'll have a bit of Sharon. And then we did the Kenny Everett bending the microphone thing.
We did. That was episode 16 from series 2.
I don't trust you. I don't trust any show that asked me back twice.
Don't. I was against it.
And look at this silly migrant. I mean, really. I mean, look at that.
Kenny Everett had been on the show before, and I think it was his first appearance where he grabbed hold of the microphone and bent it. And that's the one that you see on all the clip shows, and Terry Wogan looking shocked and surprised because he wasn't expecting it. The one that we saw, he'd clearly expecting it. They'd set it up so he'd do it again as a sort of best of.
Ah, I didn't get that bit. Right, I've never seen the original.
It's one that you see on the clip shows, and Kenny Everett does this manic aha and staring at him, just grabs hold of it. And Wogan, for a second, has no clue what he should do about this. There was none of that in this one. It was obviously, we'll get you back on, Ken. And, you know, that microphone thing was really funny last time. So just do it again, will you? And it didn't really come across as that spontaneous.
Oh, now you see, it did to me, but then I wasn't expecting it. So
really?
Yeah.
You've never seen that clip with the microphone?
No, incredibly, I haven't. But that microphone actually pissed me off because it looks tremendously uncomfortable. You're just basically waving this wand around for half an hour of recording, and that just does not look comfortable at all.
I think it was originally done so he could basically stand in the middle and reach whoever was at the end, so he didn't have to be tromping all the way along the top row to get the microphone in front of the final panellist.
Because I've got a very vivid image in my mind. I remember the transition between him to Les Dawson, and Les Dawson walked on with the wand, and just the very first thing he did was snap it in two. That was the very first thing of his first episode.
Yeah, I remember that. And it's because the wand was so associated with Terry Wogan. And my mum used to love Blankety Blank. This was absolute appointment viewing. And did it used to be on a Thursday after Top of the Pops or before Top of the Pops? It would have been after Top of the Pops.
You see, I've got it in my head that it was weekend viewing, but it can't have been.
No, weekend game show was 3-2-1.
No, that was ITV, wasn't it?
We weren't a family that limited ourselves to one channel. We weren't a BBC, and we weren't an ITV. We were just whatever you fancy watching.
I think we were more BBC than ITV, but that was generally because BBC had better sitcoms. I remember this. I mean, viewing these again now, I've realised why I used to love them so much, because the cast of stars that you got in this, these were all the entertainers of the day. And they were entertainers that had honed their craft doing lots of club work and stage work before they'd got onto television. So they'd earned their place, a lot of them.
And that comes up much more with the Les Dawson and Lily Savage, because they had the stand-up chops to be able to improvise and respond to the people that they were talking to. Terry Wogan didn't really. I mean, he had the interview skills, but he didn't have the snappy repartee that the other two had.
See, I've got to admit, I went into this quite expecting to see Terry Wogan as the governor, you know, because he was the first one. He did it for a good few years.
Absolutely. You think of him as Mr. Blankety Blank and the others as a pale imitation. Now, spoilers when we come onto the others. I think he's the weakest host.
We'll come on to this, but he's not my favourite by a long way. I think moving on, we'll move on. Because our next episode in the run is from Series 8. It's Episode 9, and it's from 1985 with Les Dawson.
To meet our distinguished contestants, Jill, very nice to meet you, Jill. Jill Hobbies from Bromsgrove in Worcestershire.
That's right.
You're married to Tony and you have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
That's unusual. Let's hope as time goes on you'll have more hobbies.
Hobbies. Yeah.
You're a housewife. Listen, it's not cost you a Stevenson to be here today. You're a housewife and you're also a state registered nurse. You went to a local hospital, didn't you?
Yeah.
Which hospital was it?
Bromsgrove General.
Lovely hospital.
Yeah,
I love hospitals.
Lovely.
That's the place where they wake you up to give you a sleeping pill. Your ambition is to run a guest house in the Isle of Wight. Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
It's a nice place, the Isle of Wight.
Yeah,
it's sort of Mallorca with fog. All the best on the show.
Thank you.
Moving over now to your co-combatant tonight, Stuart Lum. You're a lecturer in agriculture at the Bishop Burton College of Agriculture, and you specialise in helping shy cows from Yorkshire who don't like the Huddersfield.
This one featured Duncan Norvell, Barbara Windsor, Chris Tarrant, Sarah Green, Frank Carson, and Leslie Ash. And I laughed my cock off through this.
I love Les Dawson. I grew up on things like The Dawson Watch. He is one of my favourite stand-ups. He is so funny. When you bang on about Northern humour, and I do agree with you for the most part, and you cite Phoenix Nights as the thing you should go and look at to get Northern humour, I don't agree. I think Les Dawson...
I've never said that.
Yes, you have.
I have not. I've quoted Phoenix Nights many times, but no, I don't think there's
many, many times.
Many, many times. Lady Carter Blast. No, I don't. I mean, Peter Kay is he's the one that everyone now associates as Northern humour. That's just the modern take on what a Northern comic is. But I was brought up with Les Dawson and all the people that you'd see on Blackpool Pier, like Russ Abbott and whatever. So Northern humour to me is a very broad church. There's no sort of definitive Northern thing. I just think that Blankety Blank epitomised Blackpool Pier. It was like Blackpool Pier on television.
Oh, God, you can just imagine people being dragged off the Golden Mile and pissed out their skull after just falling out of Yates's Wine Lodge and sat there and made to be the contestant.
Speaking of pissed, I think Chris Tarrant had a few.
Yeah, it was marvellous, wasn't it? He and Frank Carson, the rest of them might as well not have been there. I mean, nobody knew who Leslie Ash was.
Not at the time, no.
Although, what would she have done by that? She'd done Cat's Eyes.
I don't know what Leslie Ash did prior to Men Behaving Badly.
Cat's Eyes.
Is that it?
Or is the only thing I can remember.
Her sister played Marilyn Monroe in an episode of Red Dwarf.
Who's her sister?
Debbie Ash. No, I don't know either.
And is her brother Naughty Ash?
At the tea table. Jam Butty. Mine. Anyway.
Oh, I've not heard that in years, because my gran used to do a really good line in cheese and jam sandwiches. It sounds weird. They are absolutely gorgeous.
No, I'm entirely with you on that. They are. It's great.
You see, most people I say that to just think it's the weirdest thing to ever have on a plate, but they are beyond lovely.
It's like northern cranberry sauce. Jam works quite well on a butter with many things. Many, many things. Anyway, I have got copious notes on this. First and foremost, Les Dawson. The man is God in my eyes. This, from the second he walks on, he does an opening sort of mini comedy turn.
He gets his few minutes of stand-up.
It's not even a few minutes. It's probably about 90 seconds. And within that 90 seconds, he's got everyone roaring.
It feels like a few minutes because there's so much in it.
I was impressed by the man from the word go. And every single thing he said throughout the show, he was warm and macy, and he was dropping in gags and one-liners, but they weren't cringy. Even
and none of them were taking the piss out of the contestants.
No.
Both of the ones we saw with Terry Wogan taking the piss out of the contestants. And not in a light-hearted way that we'll come on to with Lily Savage. It was a personal insult.
It was quite pithy, I've got to admit, yeah. Les Dawson, he was clearly having a whale of a time in that muted, understated way that Les Dawson had. And he was just a joy to watch, as far as I'm concerned.
I wonder if Les Dawson ever did one opposite Kenny Everett. Because that would have been a joy.
I am just consulting the Oracle here because I've got the lists of all of them in front of me. I'm skimming through. He did one with Ken Dodd, the Christmas special. But that was a...
That went on for a week.
An immovable object versus an irresistible force. Kenny Everett, there we go. December 1983, certainly. I'm sure there must have been. It can't have been the only one he was in. No, he was in one in October 1983 and in September 1983 at least. So, yeah, they must have
done. Had we prepared this in advance, then we could have actually watched those. But okay. I can't be asked to go and watch them now because I'm mid-flow.
Look at this state. If you're interested, boys and girls, look at Wikipedia. The Wikipedia article for Blankety Blank, all the shows and all the guests are listed on there in order. And the state of this, these are...
Oh, it's a proper who's who.
Oh, the A-listers. Barry Cryer, Peter Allis, Roy Barraclough, Janice Long, Mike Reed, Rory Bremner, Harry Carpenter, Barbara Windsor, Lionel Blair. John Pertwee's been in a few. Samantha Fox?
Yeah, because it's not just the end of the peer gang that you'd kind of expect from the presenters, but they had up-and-comers as well, didn't they? Well, like Leslie Ash.
I mean, look at that one from 1987. The Heidi High Gang. David Griffin, Jeffrey Holland, Ruth Maddox, Sue Pollard, Linda Regan, and Paul Shane.
I don't really remember them doing that kind of themed group. They always seem to be a fairly sort of mixed bag.
Oh, just the state of this, though. It's made me want to go and watch more. Jimmy Carson ruins his own joke quite a few times because he's written plenty of comedy answers on the card. The unfortunate thing is that he waves it around and gives away his own joke before we've seen them. He does that quite a few times. And also, which I had never noticed before and never clocked, the scoreboards are a bit belt and braces, aren't they?
And there's one bit where they, instead of having little light up things, they've got little flags that they just stick in a hole thing.
To let them know that they're ready.
Yeah, because one of them had a massive face covering size flag thing, didn't they?
Well, guess which one that was? That was Kenny.
Absolutely. Who else would it be? Oh, Barbara Woodhouse was on one.
That's my boy.
Barbara Woodhouse also, was Wookiees.
Yes, it was. That's my boy. That's Molly Sugden. No, what am I thinking of?
I don't know.
Anyway, fuck it. Barbara Woodhouse, the dog woman.
Your brain is a dark and strange place.
No, it just confuses memories. Bear in mind, I was about three when these things were on. A word on the contestants. Now, in the last episode we watched with Terry Wogan, George, one of the contestants, was a big, fat, miserable bastard. In this one, wow, the first two contestants were really getting into the spirit of it. The woman was all laughy and jokey and a bit silly, and the bloke, even though he looked quite austere in his check suit and his moustache and his comb-over, who you wouldn't think had the life and soul of the party, he was great. Got the format of the show entirely, played along, had a laugh and won.
And was brought out of himself by Les Dawson.
I would agree with that, yes.
In a way that Terry Wogan made the contestants clam up.
There's lots of people out there think that Terry Wogan is the man for Blankety Blank. But I don't think that he was the best host. I'm putting Les Dawson top of the tree on this, and by a good few branches.
Maybe it's the episodes I watched. I think I'm putting Lily Savage top, but not by very much. To me, it's Lily Savage and Les Dawson almost as a parity, and Terry Wogan a long way down.
Well, shall we skip forward a few years to 1998? It's Series 14, Episode 13. Lily Savage is in the driving seat.
I think in honour of the gentleman himself, we need the second gin.
Second squeeze of the tonic screwdriver tonight. What are we drinking?
In the interests of balance, we are drinking Anfield Gin, again from the Merseyside Distillery. 40% by volume. Anfield Gin owes its refreshing taste to an expert blend of 8 premium botanicals, with a complex background featuring elderflower and licorice. Oh dear.
Mm-hmm.
Notes of orange bring a broader citrus character and freshness to a beautifully balanced finish. Serve with a premium tonic water and a slice of orange. Well, I don't take any notice of those serving suggestions apart from the tonic.
Well, I've had a sniff of the neat stuff, and while the last one smelled of TCP, this one smells of witch hazel. I think we know what they're distilling to get these things. What do we think of the nasal appraisal?
Actually, with the tonic in, you can't really smell anything.
No, bugger all. Oh well, eyes down, dive in.
But it does taste of witch hazel. Ah, oh,
okay, hell.
Really sticks on your clack afterwards.
Fucking hell. That's,
yeah. It's quite nicely blended.
Mm.
The predominant taste is witch hazel, and it sticks on your tongue for a long time afterwards.
It's not outright nasty. It does scissor its way through your taste buds on first. Oh.
The witch hazel is no worse than the TCP.
It's a 2 from me.
It's a 2 from me as well.
Fucking hell. You'll drink some rough shit in Liverpool. Anyway, let's sweeten the bitterness. Let's
finish the episode with something nice. Because
it's Lily Savage, and she is in Series 14, Episode 13, Ron VT.
Right, now you stand here so you don't look at him. There you go. You smell nice. What's that?
Cool water, dab it off.
Dab it off. Gone all. I love the smell of Jay's fluid. Is that what it is? No, seriously, it's nice.
It's all,
yeah. Yeah, it smells lovely, Dale. Honestly, all scrubbed and clean and gorgeous. Right, you're ready. Best of luck. I hope you get this, seriously. Now, the word is blank crazy. So it's something crazy. I don't say a word, okay? Just think about it. Blank crazy. Something crazy. I can't help you. I wish I could. You feel terrible when you can't say no. Blank crazy.
Yeah.
How you doing, Dale?
I'm really worried.
Well, what's the missing word?
Stir crazy.
Stir crazy. You won't have that, I bet you. But stand here, we'll have a look. Dale, stir crazy.
In this episode, we have Rebecca Callard, Sophie Lawrence, Davina McCall, Ian McKellen, Gray O'Brien, don't know who you are, Dale Winton. And this edition was repeated on BBC One on the 1st of April 2023 as a tribute to Paul O'Grady, who passed away that week. Well, first things first, the lady herself. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Les Dawson is still top of my pile, but I think that this was an absolutely inspired bit of casting, for want of a better word. The show is presented by a character, and in character, Paul O'Grady is flawless. He's really nailed down what a blankety-blank host needs to be.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of humour, I find it really difficult to choose between Lily Savage and Les Dawson because they will both make me laugh until my sides hurt and I can't breathe and I'm crying. I think Lily Savage had the edge in terms of interaction with the guests. That's not to say that Les Dawson interacted badly and he was a fuck of a sight better than Terry Wogan. But Lily Savage, I just got the impression that they were bonded right from the word go. Now, I suspect quite a bit of that was they'd met beforehand and Les Dawson probably hadn't. Because the one that we saw that had two identical twins on each section was supposed to be a surprise and clearly wasn't. Mm. And Lily Savage wasn't even trying to pretend that it was a surprise. I think that kind of gelled it all together. Both of them interacted beautifully with the panel, but all of them were professionals. I think Lily Savage just had the edge on the interaction with the contestants, but there's so little in it.
I think it's probably because I grew up or am more familiar with Les Dawson than Lily Savage. I think there's a lot of that to do with it. But I agree, there's not a lot in it. And interaction-wise, perfect. Absolutely brilliant. Particularly...
I actually met... I met Les Dawson as well.
Really? Oh, yes. Now do tell me more.
Again, wankered out of his skull. And it was when I was in Brighton for the World Science Fiction Convention, because the great thing about the World Science Fiction Conventions, and Glasgow is coming up next year, boys and girls. I mean, assuming this actually gets released in 2023, which is by no means a guarantee.
I'll do my best.
Glasgow Worldcon is coming up next year. If you have any interest in the wider science fiction, they are so much fun. They show some amazing archive television. I know this is quite a segue, but I will get to the point eventually. And at the last one, there's a very obscure Michael Caine TV series from the early 60s where it's what if the Germans won World War II? And it's him and Sean Phillips, utterly brilliant, but only about three quarters of it survives. I never thought I'd get to see it. I saw it at the last Worldcon I went to, and it was specially couriered across from the archive. So it was delayed by about 2 hours for the courier to get there and to take it away again. So there is a bit of everything if you're interested in science fiction. Mm. But I've been to three or four of them that have been in this country going right the way back to when I was a teenager. I will be in Glasgow next year. And anyway, I was at the Brighton one, and it's a big deal to get a Worldcon in your city. And the people who decide are the attendees who cast a vote for where it's going to be in 2 years' time. So the cities that are bidding for 2 years' time throw these massive parties with loads of free alcohol. And I was a teenager. I wasn't terribly used to drinking. I was utterly wankered. And I was wandering along Brighton seafront at about 3 o'clock in the morning. And Les Dawson came the other direction with two Dolly Birds and spent about 10 minutes ripping the piss out of me with the biggest smile on his face and so much heart. And it was hilarious. And again, my sides just absolutely hurt because he was just so funny. And this was completely spontaneous person he happened to run into in the middle of the street with sort of no agenda behind him at all. And he was just the loveliest, loveliest man.
Oh, well, I can't remember.
So I've been out drinking with two of the four hosts of Blankety Blank, so and one of them's not possible. So, Bradley Walsh, I should probably watch one of your episodes just in case.
Well, you've also got David
spoilers
Malian's
later in the
that.
Episode. Yeah, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to...
I have no particular problem with David Williams. I just don't find his humour particularly funny.
Again, we'll come on to that briefly in a bit.
Well, you will, because I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah, because you
didn't. But anyway, Lily Savage. Back to Lily Savage.
Yes. Contestant Jonathan, who looks like he's been coloured in with an orange crayon, is from Oswaldwistle, which apparently is near Wigan.
On whose map?
I don't know. About 40 miles near Wigan.
The thing that amazed me the most wasn't that. It's when Jonathan said he had a wife.
Ah.
And then he stood up and he had his jumper tucked into his trousers. And I thought, nobody's done that since 1987, sunshine. Not surprised you're married.
Now, you're Jonathan Kemp,
yep.
Yes? And you're the hairdresser.
Yeah.
Please, can you do anything with this? It's like a Maori's
no.
hut. Look at this.
Sky of miracles, Lily.
What do you mean by that? Do you want a belt in the gob? Start me, my lad. Now, where do you do your hairdressing?
In Aussie.
In where?
Oswaldwistle.
I thought you were going to Australia.
No, Oswaldwistle.
Where's Oswaldwistle?
Near Wigan. We're off by Lowy England.
And you got a salon and stuff?
Yeah, me and my wife.
And you like cider? You like, I love a drop of cider.
Oh,
so does Ruth.
Yeah.
She says she doesn't drink, but
I've seen
it.
I've got problems
with cider. What happens when you take cider?
I always rag off.
You always what?
Rag off.
What's rag off?
Take my clothes off, like.
Was that what it's called? Yeah. Where was it? Oswaldwistle.
Oswaldwistle. Yeah, we have this local pub in Oswaldwistle called A's, right? And I always do it in there, but my wife threatened to leave me. So I've had to calm it down.
Why? Because you rag off.
Rag off. But, like, she doesn't mind if I go, like, just to undies, but...
If you take the works, you don't take the lot off, do you?
She says, it's mine, nobody else has got to see that.
She's
And what she doesn't realise about, what,
the bottle twistle scene is.
Apparently he drinks in a pub down the road from me. Bear in mind that this was filmed 25 years ago.
And apparently, given half a chance, we'll whip his tackle out.
No, that's not what that means. To rag off.
What he said was that it meant that he would strip down. And since he was married, he stopped stripping down past his underwear.
Moving softly on.
You're going to explain what it actually meant.
Well, ragging off just means to get your kit off, not necessarily get your wang out.
But he did specifically say that if it wasn't for the fact that his wife didn't want him to, he would strip right the way naked.
Yeah, he must be incredible fun at a party, like itching powder. The prizes are a bit better this time around. There's a holiday.
Oh, yeah, the Terry Wogan's era prizes were shit.
There's a set of pans and a portable telly that you can tune in.
They were famously shit, and people used to take the piss out of it at the time.
I want to find a blankety-blank checkbook and pen, and there are none on eBay. I bet they're worth a fortune now.
Let's be honest, if you had one, you wouldn't give it up, would you?
Well, in preparation for this episode, I went a-searching, and there's some in pristine nick on a prestigious auction site. I suspect they're very expensive because the prices aren't on them. And also, there was one on Reddit where some young girl had said that her dad was on it in 1980 and didn't score any points. And that had seen better days. It could have done with a bit of Brasso on it. But no, if I had one, I wouldn't give it away either.
Did you know this? Captain Sir Tom Moore of walking around the block and earning millions of pounds
selling poppies
to do the stuff that the government should have been doing during COVID was a contestant on Blankety Blank.
Yes, I did know that.
Christmas special 1983 with Beryl Reid and Freddie Starr.
What else have we got on this episode? Well, I know that it's going to be of very little interest to you, but Rebecca Callard and her amazing flame red hair. I know her best as Arietti from the BBC version of The Borrowers. And she's also recently been, she was a love interest in The Detectorists on BBC Four, which coincidentally features an episode where they metal detect and find a blank-to-blank checkbook minus pen in a field. It's true, that.
You can look it up.
Oh, and also, I'm going to be a bit disingenuous here, but I thought the panellists were a bit shit. You've got Lily Savage giving her all, really trying to get into the spirit of things. And then you've got the panellists. They've not really got the vibe and the charisma that the 80s panellists did. And I'll come back to this because they've not honed their trade on stage. It's all been in front of a camera.
Where they can do retakes, yeah. You want somebody who can do that comeback.
You've got Dale Winton in the Kenny Everett chair.
And who was disappointing.
Yeah, just none of them had that sparky comeback, that flair, that wit. So you've got Lily Savage doing all of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, and Permatan Blokey or Twin Blokeys were clearly there for Dale Winton, weren't they? There was clearly supposed to be banter and sparks between them, and it just didn't happen. And it wasn't down to the failure of the contestants. It was down to Dale Winton not engaging. Ian McKellen, I thought, was pretty good, but he's very funny, but his sense of humour is very dry and doesn't really lend itself to that kind of real quick fire.
Ian McKellen, I thought, again, a bit of a misfire, but they're not putting him in his natural raconteur environment, or rather he didn't fit that.
And I assume was there because he's a mate of Paul O'Grady.
I would think so.
Because as I understand it, they were good friends in real life.
Well, that came across on screen. Because Paul O'Grady hosted this as Lily Savage between 1997 and 1999 on BBC, and then again from 2001 to 2002 on ITV. We've also watched, it's sort of an outtakes reel from Series 14, the very first episode, with Liz Dawn.
Oh, God, that was funny.
Now, this is a link that you sent that we should watch as a sort of bonus thing. Fuck me tight. That was hilarious.
Who would you like to play with?
Liz.
Oh. Are you sure about that?
No.
Yeah, you sure?
Yeah.
Well, the word is Bell Blank. Now, don't say nothing, and then you write it down.
Bell.
Blank. did you ask, eh?
Can she think about?
She thought it.
That is awesome.
She can't tell you. You have to write it down.
Oh, I know
and if
that.
They both match, you see, she gets a set of pans. Pans, Liz, we're talking about here. A skillet, a frying pan, and a wok. Oh, wow. My God.
She's married.
She's married, yes.
She's married, so she knows all about men's things.
All right, Bet. So what do you think, Belle? Are all the other game shows like this? Are they?
The producer came over and said, tell her not to do anything rude.
Now that's the sort of person they should have had on. Liz Dawn was awesome.
Yeah, and what it really demonstrated was just how good Lily Savage was at geeing things along when Liz Dawn was obviously struggling to remember what she'd said two sentences before. And Lily wasn't vicious in any way. She was taking the piss a bit, but it was lighthearted and it was keeping everybody's spirits up. And I was so entertained by these episodes that we watched to the point where I'm going to have to watch more of them.
Again, I'm looking through the cast list for the Lily Savage period. And on that show...
Oh, Iwa Wuwa. 25th September 1989, Edward Woodward, Denise Welsh, Dina Payne, Scott Neal, Richard Whiteley, Gail Tuesday. Gail Tuesday. Honor Blackman. Christmas special 1999 was Donald Sutherland, Roy Barraclough, Honor Blackman, Barbara Windsor, Anthea Turner and Tim Vincent. I bet that was fun. Anyway, let's step away from the list of people because otherwise we will just...
Reel them all off
and say, oh, we should watch this. And boys and girls, this is wildly entertaining. I know it's a crappy game show from years ago and the prizes are dreadful and the game doesn't actually make an awful lot of sense. But it is so entertaining. The thing that makes it entertaining is the host. Don't bother with the Terry Wogan. I know that's some kind of heresy, but he's by no means the best ones on this. Go for a Les Dawson. Go for a Lily Savage. They are utterly hilarious.
Well, just for completeness, in 2016, there was a Christmas special with David Walliams. There are scant clips of this online. It doesn't work.
Last Christmas, my nutcracker sadly broke, so instead I had no choice but to crack nuts with my...
Teeth.
Teeth.
Oh.
Okay. Might be possible. Joe, what have you got?
I went with Little Friend.
Little Friend.
Okay. There he is. He's your little friend.
Okay, we're not going to ask any questions who that little friend is. And what have you... Hammer, we have...
Straightness.
What?
Well, I just was thinking.
Show us, I might not spell it right. Let's see it.
Straightness.
Right.
But I was thinking of the same motion, you see.
Yeah.
They're close together.
It's weird, isn't it? She didn't say straightness. It's odd.
I've not bothered with it, frankly.
No, but fast forward to 2020, the BBC did a Christmas special with Bradley Walsh.
Here we go, Matty. There once was an elf called Flo, whose husband got cold in the snow, so to make him feel better, she took off his sweater and rubbed him till he started to...
smile.
Oh. No!
It's a lyric, Matty! The structural forms of each of the page.
It's a lyric, it's got a rhyme. It's got a rhyme, Matty. Take back your answer. What rhymes?
Take it back.
Take it back. No, he didn't understand.
I'll give you a clue. It might rhyme with flow.
Hang on. You put smile. You said smile.
Unfortunately.
Okay. I think it's... Anyway.
I've watched clips of this online. Again, there are no complete episodes to watch online. The set is glorious, but it's too big. And Bradley Walsh tries far too hard to wring jokes out of the questions. So all that subtlety is lost. And again, you look at the panellists that are on there. They're decent names, but they're not the 80s performers. The one that I saw, though, the clip that I saw, Brian Connolly was on it. Now, that spark was there because Brian Connolly, that sort of era... But he was next to people like, I don't know who these people are, Sarah Hadland, David Hay, Alex Jones, One Show Girl, but Esme Young and Jordan North.
Jordan North is funny.
Yes, but in a different medium. You put them in that sort of arena, they're not big enough, or they don't have a big enough presence in that arena. You put some of those people on microphone one-to-one, they'll be superb. But it takes something to transcend that and be big on screen as well and fill a studio. And it's just an art that's lost.
Let's have a look. Johnny Vegas has been on. I bet he gave as good as he could get.
Who else is a Christmas special in 2021? Tom Allen rubs me up the wrong way, I'm afraid. Mel B, I bet she was actually quite entertaining. Richard E.
Joe Brand.
Again, Joe Brand, it all depends whether you can pull her out of cake hole mode, because she is actually quite witty if she get her away from that. But, you know,
we're going through all of it and it's dragging out the occasional one. Whereas, and Jimmy Carr's on loads of times, Michelle Visage. But you go back to the Lily Savage era and every single lineup, you think, Greg Wallace is on there. I think, can't stand him, he's an arsehole. And, ditto Anton Dubec. But you go back to Lily Savage, and every single lineup, there's at least one or two of the contestants that you look at and think, I bet they're fantastic.
Well, I'm just looking through, and I've not rewatched any of these for years, but it's been a wonderful eye-opener. And just a reminder of the talent that we had in the 1980s. And it's all gone. It's little wonder that by the time you got to the early 90s, they were dying off in swathes. I think we lost most of the Carry On cast in 1 year because they'd all smoked and drank their entire life. And they all died relatively young. And that 80s crop that you saw on TV all the time just all snuffed it. With them, if you look through the people that were on this thing, they were real big names. They were real big performers that, and I'll say it again, they'd honed their craft. And the ones that are on television now, it's no disrespect to them. I'm sure that they will blossom and bloom into great personalities. Everyone's got to start somewhere.
And it's a different medium.
It is, very much. But they've not worked for it. It's just the people that have got famous through being on TV.
I think they've worked for it in a different kind of way. They've not gone through the comedy club stand-up thing that somebody like Les Dawson would have done. They've not gone through the stand-up drag queen thing that Lily Savage would have done. They've not gone through that kind of live environment. But that doesn't mean that they haven't worked for it. They've worked for it in a different kind of context.
Now,
with something like this, you look at the Les Dawson, you look at Lily Savage episodes, they're bouncing backwards and forwards between the contestants who've come from that same environment, and it's a snappy repartee. You look at more recent television, you don't have that snappy, you have to respond to this at this exact moment because this is the moment that you have and there are no edits. And possibly radio, you still get that, but on television, you certainly don't.
So wrapping it up, I suppose the obvious thing here, you have got, you've got five hosts to place in order. Technically.
Well, I've got three hosts because I didn't bother watching any of the later two.
Well, I'll skip four and five for both of us because bottom of the pile is David Walliams. He only did one and he wasn't amazing at it. Bradley Walsh, I'm sure, could be if he put his mind to it, but it's a lost art. Then third place, I'm afraid, you've got Terry Wogan. Not as brilliant as I remember.
I agree, I'm afraid. I mean, I know he's known as the classic and... Actually, he didn't do as many episodes as Les Dawson, but he's the one that made the format in the UK. I mean, it was a...
Match game, it's known as in America, I believe.
Yeah, and it predated Blankety Blank, and it's one of the game shows, or one of the sections that they do in RuPaul's Drag Race. It's a pity we don't have Paul on, because he knows about RuPaul's Drag Race, and I don't really. But yeah, I was disappointed by Terry Wogan. I have very, very, very fond memories.
And it's not even as if we just watched the one episode. We did watch a couple.
And actually, of all of them, Terry Wogan is the one where we watched two full episodes. Mm. We watched a representative Les Dawson, we watched a representative Lily Savage. And both of those, just done at random, were much better than the two Terry Wogans we saw.
Well, I'm putting Paul O'Grady, Lily Savage, above Wigon. And I actually think that Paul O'Grady was having a much better time than Terry Wogan. Terry Wogan was, he was there, he was hosting it, he was doing the Terry Wogan thing. Paul O'Grady was really quite enjoying himself, I think.
Yeah, now whether that's just Paul O'Grady's a better live performer than Terry Wogan, because Terry Wogan was much more comfortable, radio personality, Eurovision commentator, behind the microphone with a drink on, which he may not have been allowed to do with this because they'd have recorded about six or seven episodes on the same day. It sounds as though we're rubbishing on Wogan, and we're really, really not, because his stuff is fun, but it's not as much fun as what came later. Now, for me, yeah, Terry Wogan is very definitely third in my list. I really struggle to choose between the other two because I love them so much. I think Paul O'Grady slightly and very slightly has the edge because he engages better with the contestants. Now, it's possible that that's just down to the episodes that we saw. And it might be that on other episodes, Les Dawson engaged them with them better than Paul O'Grady would. It was wildly entertaining. I absolutely loved watching these.
Top of my pile by, I don't want to say it, but it is a country mile, is Les Dawson. Every single thing about his episodes just gelled perfectly for me. I think that he was a brilliant host. He was completely in control of the situation. He was front and center. No matter who was on the panel, Les Dawson was the one you were watching. He was great with the contestants. He was great with the panelists. They were a joy to watch from beginning to end. I laughed my head off from the minute he walked on until the end credits roll. I just think that they were glorious, and I want to watch more of Les Dawson.
I want to watch more Blankety Blank from both Les Dawson and Lily Savage. I can't choose between the two. They both made me absolutely split my sides laughing. Like I say, I think Lily Savage had the edge in terms of interaction with the guests, but it was a very, very slight edge. And, you know, I've seen them both in other TV programs. I've seen them in recorded stand-up. I've actually seen Lily Savage live. I never saw Les Dawson perform live. They are so funny. Very different styles of humor, but side-splitting.
And with that, as a fitting tribute to Paul O'Grady, who both of us feel is a great loss to the entertainment world, a very, very hard-working man, which I think contributed to his, frankly, early death, you will be missed. So, Paul O'Grady, raising a glass to you.
Yeah, I don't normally react too much to celebrity deaths. One, because I don't know them, and two, because I see a lot of death in my day-to-day job anyway. Paul O'Grady's death upset me, and there aren't many celebrity deaths that do. I think the last one that really made me stop and think, oh, fuck, was Stuart Damon.
Yes. And on that somber note, boys and girls, we shall sign off. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the ride. We would encourage you to go and look on the Tube and watch some old episodes of Blankety Blank, because this episode in particular has been a riot.
I don't want to say it's a somber note, because we are celebrating the life of Paul O'Grady. We are celebrating Lily Savage, a joyous celebration of the life of one of Britain's most entertaining entertainers, the absolutely hilarious and huge-hearted Paul O'Grady.
The Exton Moss Experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.